The Man in Line. Daily interaction, debate and exchange of ideas. Broadcast on Manx Radio.
Well, good afternoon, Fast Am I. Yes, the COVID roundabout is back once again. You never know who's going to be on this show. It's Alex sitting in for Andy through until 1 o'clock. Open line on the Man in Line today. We'd love to hear from you about any topic that is maybe getting your goat on 66 13 68. You can text 166 177 or do the same on WhatsApp. So the Treasury Minister says that government is aware of the real risk inflation is posing. Doesn't say what he's going to do about it, but at least they're aware. Also, another MHK says that a busy road on the outskirts of Douglas is quite lethal for pedestrians. Do you think it's the only one? What roads needs improving? And also, we heard on breakfast this morning about the problems with spending a penny around the island. Now, obviously, it was mainly focused on Douglas and Douglas Promenade when it comes to public conveniences. But do you think there's enough public conveniences? Or is this something else that, in trying to keep rates down, local authorities have turned around and thought, it's too much money just to keep toilets going. They're a bit like public telephone boxes. They used to be everywhere. Now you can't find them anywhere. Okay? We'd like your opinion on this topic or any other. First of all, let's kick off with a comment I mentioned there before. Because a busy road on the outskirts of Douglas is quite lethal for pedestrians, whilst another is desperately in need of improvement. That's from the Douglas North MHK David Ashford, who's going to be asking about road safety issues in his constituency at this week's House of Keys sitting. He's concerned about the pedestrian safety on Johnny Watson's Lane, as well as visibility issues on Tramode Road. So our Sean Camper asked him why these areas are of particular concern.
So in terms of the pedestrianised one, at the moment, going down that bottom bit of Johnny Watson's Lane, there is quite a speed of cars. It's something I've been raising for several years now, in particular the fact that's also the dividing line for Tramode, the two different sides of Tramode, and for children particularly trying to get across, particularly those going to St Ninian's on school mornings, it can be quite lethal. So I'm actually checking and following up on something that I've been campaigning for quite a while now to get improved pedestrian crossings in that area.
I know as well you've had some written questions recently about the footpaths in that area and issues around there. Is there a general concern with road safety for pedestrians in your constituency?
I think in terms of not just road safety but also in quality of the roads, so both in terms of pedestrian footpaths and also the roads. While we've had some great work done up at Glen Park and they are now starting on Cronkerberry, there's other areas of the constituency which I think need a bit of TLC. And I will be campaigning for that.
You're asking as well in your question about Tramode Road specifically about an improvement scheme and whether or not it's been abandoned. Are there some plans there that do seem to have been forgotten?
So there was the improvement scheme that came forward, must be again probably about 18 months ago now, and there was two presentations to the general public around that. I'll be honest, the improvement scheme I thought was absolutely ludicrous that was being proposed. It was very much over the top compared to what actually needs to be done. That seemed to be the feedback that came from most residents that attended those meetings as well. So I want to check and see, has DOI actually moved away from those plans? But there is some very commonsensical things that do need to happen, particularly the road surface down there and also the improvement on the junction, because at the moment there isn't clear line of sight on that junction. So I want to check that if the improvement scheme has actually been abandoned, the DOI isn't just washing its hands of the entire area and that it still recognises there's improvements that do need to be done.
David Ashford, MHK, talking to Sean Cowper there. Now, of course, he's just a backbench MHK anymore, so is he just focusing back on his constituents? You know, when he was Treasury Minister, give any extra money to the DOI when it comes to sorting out the island's roads? I remember a figure was vaunted around quite a lot a number of years ago, I think, when John Shimon was Minister, going back that far, that it was going to cost nearly £1 billion if we wanted to sort out all of the island's roads. And that, of course, was completely and utterly unrealistic. So the question is, you know, have you encountered issues on these roads and are there areas around the island that are in much bigger need of improvement? Some of the roads on the island are truly dreadful when it comes to their surface. And then we allow lots of utilities and telecoms just to dig them up and patch them afterwards, and we don't seem to care about the road's surface as long as it's been patched up. But the actual ride is still abysmal. The design of roads, the safety of them, the safety of pavements. I did a part of the parish walk the other day, and when I went from cross fourways, you couldn't stay on the pavement because of the amount of growth of undergrowth and flowers and everything else, which I'm sure from a biosphere point of view, you know, we're all celebrating. But you had to walk in the middle of the road. And if you did get onto the pavement, the surface was all crumbled and cracked. OK, so when it comes to priorities on the roads, do you think these are the areas we should be looking at? Do you think we should delve deeper into the pot of public finances to sort out the roads? I'd love to hear your opinion. 66 13 68, text 166 177. Now, Graham's on the line. And Graham, good afternoon. You want to take us back to our topic on Friday, don't you?
I do indeed, yes, if you don't mind.
Yes, far away.
I stated on Friday, of course, that wind farms were absolutely the wrong way to go for renewable energy. This was inspired by, of course, by your interview the other day with Paul Crane and John Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, of course, that wind power is seriously unreliable, both when there is no wind and when there's too much, which can happen on the Isle of Man, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it therefore requires a 100% backup. Secondly, wind turbines occupy a lot of space. They are omnidirectional and unapproachable. You can't go near them, and require massive permanent foundations with complex connections. Finally, they are only marginally viable economically, requiring ongoing maintenance and full replacement after about 15 years.
Can I stop you there, though, Graham? Because all power generation is that. You know, the power station that we had built at Paul Rose for a huge amount of money, it's not for eternity. It requires a large amount of cost of ongoing maintenance. Surely that's the cost of power generation in any form of power generation.
Indeed, but it doesn't require necessarily full replacement and continuous maintenance during its lifetime. Well, what I'm about to mention solves that problem. The carbon fibre blades as well are not recyclable.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, wind farms offshore create no-go areas for shipping and fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't go anywhere near them. This would seriously impact on our quinny and scallop industries if we had them in our territorial waters here. And that would be permanently because, of course, they have serious foundations which are normally just left in place when they're at the end of their useful life. So the viable alternative, and I've mentioned this before, of course, is geothermal energy. The island is sitting on granite. It actually outcrops on the island here and is quarried. And the gravity data, I'm a geophysicist, by the way, mm-hmm. The gravity data shows that it is here beneath the island. It produces a gravity anomaly. Not of the sort you would think, because granite is actually of lower density than the surrounding rocks, so the gravity anomaly is negative.
So in terms of, and I'll try and keep this to the layman's sort of point of view, because you're the expert,
yes,
and not me, why have we not embraced geothermal energy? What is the reason that, at the moment, let's be honest, the Isle of Man has not embraced any form, really, of renewable energy? If you can find me a government building with solar panels on its roof, I'd be glad to hear it. But why are we not pursuing geothermal energy? What is the off-putting aspect of it?
I honestly can't answer that. I'm sorry to say that the green movement as a whole doesn't seem to recognise it. This is the big problem. It's just that people don't know about it and don't understand it. And not everywhere in the world, of course, is it viable. There is a green energy, a geothermal energy plant down in Cornwall, which, you know, the young lady, the geologist from there, was actually interviewed by you guys a few months ago. And it's there and it's working. It would work on the island.
So basically, if someone maybe from the government sort of climate change committee, as it were, maybe if Daphne Kane is listening, if she could ring in to 66 13 68 and tell us why is the government not pursuing this, or maybe they are considering it and it's, you know, in the forthcoming plan, but at the moment you think that's the way we should be going.
I do, yes, and I'd be quite happy to have a sensible discussion with Daphne, of course.
There's a future for perspective programme. I'll pass your number on to Phil for that one, Graham.
Righto.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. Lovely to hear from you.
It's a pleasure.
Cheers. That was Graham there, who's talking about basically he believes that wind generation is a no-go. Now, I did mention, of course, on Friday, I think, to Brian at the very end of the show, that, of course, wind generation in the UK, it does produce quite sizable amounts. Looking at the Office of National Statistics, the UK last year generated 75,610 gigawatt hours of electricity from both onshore and offshore wind. An interesting little factoid, apparently that's enough to power 8.4 trillion LED light bulbs. If you've got that many around your house. But the question is, as Graham says, that are they reliable? Okay. In terms of the maintenance cost, are they economically viable? And they don't produce, and generate electricity all the time. That is another question, because it's windy. It's windy a lot of the time, let's be honest. But it's not windy all the time. Let's have a look at some of your text messages that are coming in. Join in the debate, of course. It'd be lovely to hear from you. 66 13 68. Let's have a look. Hi, Alex. Let's talk about the TT schedule. Of course, this is next year's TT schedule, which is effectively going to be lengthened, as it were. No races on Sunday, please, says Richard. Hey, what happened to all the Lynx firing signs during TT? Still boxed up in the cupboard? Use them. Anything to reduce the possibility of RTAs. Good point. Although, in terms of spectator-wise, it was actually a comparatively safe TT this year, which was interesting, wasn't it? Whether we had a large amount of Lynx firing signs or not. Simon on South Quay says, hi, Alex. Richmond Hill has been patched up to the point where the road markings have all but disappeared. Ah, Richmond Hill, the hill that heals itself. Do you remember, we got those speed limits, didn't we, saying that the surface wasn't very good, and there was an argument with the contractor, and then the speed limits went down and down and down, and we were told there was going to be some work done on the surface of the road. Nothing was done. There's been patching for drainage, and improved drainage, and then the speed limits were removed, and yet the surface of the road, still abysmal. So, I don't know what's happening, but thank you, Simon, for that. Let's have a look. Oh, thank you very much. John says, hi, Alex. I quite agree with David Ashford. The roads around Tramode are dangerous, with people speeding, and the footpaths are dangerous in places too. Once again, I keep on mentioning to any MHK who dares to actually listen that if you try and walk up the footpath to Douglas Head here, walk on the landside one. There is one there. Yeah, it's just so overgrown you can't see it anymore. Now, Ian is on the line this afternoon for the Man in Line. Ian, Faster Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Alex. Listening to Graham before, and I've listened to him several times before, his comments on wind farms sort of deny economic sense. All over the world, there are now thousands of wind farms producing phenomenal amounts of electricity, both onshore and offshore. If they did not work, if they didn't save money, if they weren't economical, big business all over the world would not be building them. What would be the point?
Well, playing devil's advocate in for Graham here is that I think what he said is that because they aren't able to create generate electricity all the time because they're weather dependent, he feels that there needs to be a 100% backup. Because, I mean, in the UK, they're not the main source of power generation. They are the largest infrastructure, second largest infrastructure is wind generation, but they only produce about a quarter of the UK's demands. So I think from what Graham was saying is that we can't fully rely on wind generation and there's lots of downsides. I mean, do you feel that we should be investing heavily in wind, or do you think there's another option?
Well, it depends what you mean by investing heavily. I understand we spent something of the order of $300 million on the current power station.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what our total generation is, capacity from Pull Rose, but I suspect it's in the area of 60, 70 megawatts per hour. Now, modern wind turbines, the largest offshore wind turbines, currently knock out 9 megawatts an hour when they're working fully. Even if each of those wind towers costs £10 million and connecting them to the land to the high voltage distribution system cost another £10 million. That's £100 million. I'm not saying you then just scrap the existing power station. You just simply have it maintained to be on standby. Gas can be turned on and off. It's not something that has to be continuously running.
But in terms of, I've just looked up the stats here, Ian. So the combined gas turbine power station at Pull Roads, it's an 88 megawatt gas turbine, and the actual capacity of the entire power station is 135 megawatts. Is Pull Rose.
Oh.
And that was put in 2003, and it's going to need either replacement or serious upgrades or anything else around about 2030. Okay, so we've got to start making decisions in the next few years. Question is that having a gas power station in reserve, is that the greener way to go?
Probably not. A smaller modular nuclear plant with one or two pods at 30 megawatts or three or four of them making 120 megawatts. Again, the estimated cost for these plants is far less than the combined cost of the existing power station.
Okay. And Ian, dare I ask, I know it's muted occasionally by people who ring in, the idea of a small nuclear power plant?
Well, I think that these small nuclear power plants that have been used in nuclear submarines over the years have been running successfully. As far as I'm aware, we haven't lost a nuclear submarine to a nuclear accident or anything of that nature. And they've been running for just about 60 years now.
We could just berth one up against the Victoria Pier and plug the island in, do you think? That would work.
I think it's considerably more sophisticated.
I thought it might be. Ian, thanks very much for your call. Lovely to chat to you.
All right. Cheers now. Bye.
Thank you, Ian. Yes, so Ian has the opposite view to Graham. He feels that, you know, the wind turbines are economically viable as long as there is a backup for them, which is actually something that Ian did suggest. Now, changing topic entirely, back to the one of roads and pavements and things like this. Betty's on the line. Good afternoon, Betty.
Hi, Alex. You did ask people to ring in about pavements. That's why I'm ringing. On going from Lazare Road to Ramsey, The pavement on the left going down is quite narrow anyway, but it's much, much narrower at the moment because of overgrown bushes. Mm. And it's just not very even either. And I must admit, I'm thinking of myself in this case. I've stopped being able to drive because of my eye problems. And I would like to get one of those scooters that old people have.
Mm-hmm.
But because the pavement is so narrow, I can't have one. And I wondered if anything could be done about the bushes and about the state of the pavement generally.
Well, Betty, I mean, the Department of Infrastructure and the government have spent millions over the last few years on what they term as active travel. But a lot of it seems to go towards the cycling fraternity and cycle paths and things like this. Do you feel that pedestrianised areas have been forgotten about almost when it comes to just pavements on the side of the road and making them accessible?
Yes, I do. And I'm sure you've been told about the cycle path that starts at the school and ends up in the middle of a bend going to Ramsey, mm-hmm. which is really ridiculous and it does very little. That sort of cycle path you could really do without.
Well, have you spoken to your MHKs about it, Betty?
I haven't, because I've only been thinking about it in the last little while when I thought, well, I really would like to get one of those scooters and be independent and ride into Ramsey myself, because I live on the Lazare Road, you see, but at the moment it's just not possible.
Which side of the border effectively do you sit, Betty? Are you in Eyre and Michael? Are you in Ramsey when it comes to when you vote for?
I'm in Eyre.
Eyre. Yes. Of course, your MHK is the Chief Minister, so I would advise giving him a bit of a call and saying, you know, don't just come and see me at election time. I've got an issue, because that's what democracy is all about, isn't it?
Yes, I'll do that. But I only rang up because you asked people to ring in about their views on this sort of thing.
And you feel that actually more investment should be made in just the standard pavements in terms of width, in terms of surface, that allows people like you better access?
Yes, and also if it's possible to clip back hedges and things.
OK. Well, thank you very much for your call, Betty. It's lovely to speak to you this afternoon.
Thank you, and you.
Cheers.
And take care and have a good day.
You too. Thanks for your call. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Betty there talking about pavements. I'm doing well this afternoon. I've probably upset Daphne Kane and the Chief Minister now. So, you know, let's see if we can get a bingo board by the time of the end of the show. But Betty does have a point there that many of our pavements around the island, you know, give the DOI their due. They have a huge sort of a catalogue of roads and pavements that they have to maintain. And many of our roads and many of our pavements are, quite frankly, antiquated. The pavements themselves were put in not when there was a standardised width, a standardised design, but have we left pavements go, really? We don't really look at pavements. We look at roads, we look at cycle paths and things like this, but we don't really look at just standard pavements where pedestrians can walk. Okay, maybe that's something that actually, outside of the mobile population, if you are less mobile and you need to use pavement areas, these are things that do need to be in good nick. I'd love to hear from you if you have trouble when it comes to pedestrian access around the island. Give us a call, 66 13 68, or you can send us a text, 166 177. Speaking of which, let's go through some text, shall we? Interesting. Thank you, Gene. G says, in the UK northwest, a recycling plant has started converting CO2 to make other chemicals for use in the industry. But where will the CO2 come from? A gas power station which will be running for 20 years plus. If you can send me details of that, G, to back that up, I'd love to hear from them. Email it to studio@manxradio.com. And Des says, the reason there's so much growth on our footpaths is all the carbon we put in the air. Well, this was something that Paul Crane did point out, actually, that when he was challenged that we do need carbon dioxide in the air for plant life to grow off, yes, that makes sense. However, the rising temperature is the issue, OK? Because eventually your plant life will not survive in it. Let's have a look. Next text is from the Manx Viking, Mr. and Mrs. Viking with their son Manx. 100% green energy is not possible. We need wind and solar energy, but we also need to use our natural gas as a backup when other systems can't keep up, something that Ian was saying before. They do it in America and in Texas, apparently. Oh, well, once again, if you can send me details of that, it would be lovely to hear from you. Paul has texted in. Weeds everywhere in Douglas. Yes, apparently they're called Wildflower Meadows. But one day there'll be a tram track there. Also, Onken, drains are blocked, gutters and pavements overgrown with weeds. This is going to cause a lot of problems in the future if not addressed. Thank you, Paul, for that message. And we got another message in from Kate. It's quite a long one. Here we go. Hi, Alex. It'd be a great idea for proper lighting to be installed along Balor Fletcher Road. So many people work at Nobles Hospital and the surrounding area and would be happy to walk from Douglas all year round. But in the autumn and winter months, it's just too dark, especially when the pavement is so rough. Isn't that the one where there is a set of grids for some telecoms that sit about a foot proud of the pavement, if I remember rightly, on the left-hand side there. And I think if the road was more pedestrian-friendly, it really would encourage people to consider active travel. Kate, thank you very much for that. And we've got another caller on the line, and we'll go to them just after this. Next Radio. Just gone 12:30 on the Man in Line. Open line for a Monday, 27th of June. Alex in for Andy through until 1. We seem to be talking a lot about pavements and the state of them. Hillary's on the line. Good afternoon, Hillary.
Hi, good afternoon.
So which pavements are getting your goat?
Well, I'm speaking on behalf of my mother, really. Mm-hmm. She's 89 and she lives in Waverley Court in Douglas. Now, Waverley Court is a sheltered housing unit and it's at the bottom of Bathurst Street, and she cannot manage to walk out to the shops at the bottom of Bathurst Street because of the state of the pavements. Now, she walks with a walker, and she's very able with a walker because it's a really good four-wheeled affair. She is partially sighted. There's ramps to her flat door and everything, so she can access Waverley Court perfectly well, but there's no way she can actually manage to get to the shop because to cross the road, it's a very wide junction at the bottom of Bathurst Street. Mm-hmm. The traffic hurtle round the corner. There's no ramps on and off, you know, to get on and off the pavement at all. The state of the pavements is an absolute disgrace. Even I struggle and I'm able-bodied. There's 89 units in Waverley Court, and a lot of the people there all walk with walkers. Some of them all have, like, the mobility scooters as well. And on a regular basis, I see one lady up and down Hillary Road, actually in the middle of the road, because she can't use the pavement, on an electric mobility scooter.
So,
you know, now, this is just appalling, because this is discrimination for all people in a sheltered housing accommodation.
That's...
You know, in the fact that they're unable to safely walk outside. And very shortly, somebody's going to have a major accident. Also, due to the speed limit round here, up and down Hillary Road, they regularly accelerate, and just past the old Park Road school site, they can be doing 35-40 past there. Now, to my mind, none of this is acceptable at all, and we need to be looking at it. I've spoken to Andrew Bentley, and he sort of goes, yeah. You know, where I live, we're supposed to have double yellow lines. There are no double yellow lines outside our house. They have completely disappeared. And on a regular basis, we actually have cars driving up and down the pavement.
Now, who's your MHK? Which area of Douglas do you fit into, MHK-wise?
Is it Douglas East? Is it Claire Barber?
And Joni Farragher?
Yeah. You know, now, Jodie Farragher's been round, and she stood on our doorstep and said, oh, my goodness, we've actually had the police in our house speaking to us, and they've gone, wow, that car was driving fast past our house. You know, now, in the whole of Douglas needs looking at all these small residential streets. It needs to be a very clear one-way system so that people can't hurtle around. It all needs to be slowed down to 20 mile an hour. And the DOI actually need to pull the finger out and sort out the footpath, because I walk to work every day, and if I did a video whilst I was walking, everybody would be horrified, you know, because you can't walk out in decent shoes because you wreck them.
I mean, there is this accusation occasionally with the active travel strategy that it is discriminatory with the fact that it's for able-bodied people who are meant to be cycling, and we don't see mass investment in pavements and walkways. Do you think that we need to get back to the basics, or do you think that actually there is another way to sort these problems out?
I think because of the housing stock in Douglas, and when you actually look at the number of people who walk to work, then the footpath should be redone. You know, and I think a lot more people would probably walk to work if the footpaths were better. You know, it's 14 minutes if I get a good sprint on to get to work.
Oof.
You know, it's not even worth me dreaming of taking the car at all. You know, but we need to look at the whole system, the traffic management, how we're creating access for older people partially sighted. There's hundreds of young people who are partially sighted who struggle with footpaths. It isn't just the old people.
Hillary, can I ask you, because what you're talking there is effectively taking a bigger picture look at the town and the island. Do you feel then that, number one, this requires vision and whether we actually have it or not? And do you think that, as the Chief Minister alluded to when he was on air a few weeks ago, that maybe government's just got lazy?
I think government has got very lazy. And I think as a society, the Isle of Man has got very lazy. You know, I walk out my house, and I pick up litter every day of the week because people just abandon litter. There's no litter campaign. There's no education that it's wrong to drop litter. We need to start at the bottom and work up and start with the small things. You know, let's paint the double yellow lines. Let's get rid of the weeds. Let's tidy it up and let's have a bit of care. You know, there's and have a pride in where we live.
Okay.
You know, we've just come back from Portugal, down on the Algarve. And do you know what? It was absolutely spotless. And I mean spotless.
Because they have a pride.
Yeah, they had a pride. And this is a big tourist place. You know, there was no litter. The sweet streets were swept. Mm. The recycling was amazing because instead of just having a bin, underneath the bin, they had a great big massive tub, if you will, you know, a big dugout tub with a small bin on top. So you put the stuff in the bin and it went into this big, massive, big bucket underneath. The bin man came along and he picked up the whole of the bucket and put it in the garbage cart, you know, the recycling thing. So there was none of the bins weren't overflowing. You know, we're not even emptying the bins 24/7 like we should be. You know, if we want to be a tourist resort, the Isle of Man, we need to do things every day, not just Monday to Friday.
Thank you for your comments there, Hilary. I think they'll be shared by others. There's quite a few on the line, but thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome. But if we can sort it out for the old people, I think it's the old people that need help, like Waverley Court, you know.
Okay, thank you very much, Hilary. Lovely to speak to you this afternoon. Many good points there by Hilary in terms of the pavements, the state they're in, the state the island's in. Okay, we know that video that Charles Gard made that caused quite a stir. I think it's up to something like about 80,000 views or something on YouTube, which just highlighted where we don't have any care. Douglas Council, okay? Certain Douglas councillors are constantly tweeting about how they're excited about painting their fountain on Douglas Promenade. Can you rebuild the wall, please? A tatty piece of A4 saying, sorry, this is due to Storm Barrow, which was 7 months ago. Sorry, that doesn't wash, quite frankly. If you want to be a city, you can rebuild a wall instead of looking tatty on the prom there. When it comes to areas such as up at the Housedrake, there's the old shelter there that's all run down on one side. On the other side of the road, there is either the department or the department's contractors who've been fly-tipping when doing works on the railways. There's metal cans, there's plastic, there's everything else just sitting there. Okay? No one sorts it out. We never seem to have a pride in the finished job. The promenade is a prime example of that. Still got tons of cracks in it. We don't care. We do things mediocrity. And as Hilary says there, when she went to Portugal, it was all lovely. So, is it about time we started taking a bit of pride in our island? Jed is on the line. Jed, good afternoon.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm not so bad. How are you, sir?
Yeah, very good. I was just picking up on the commentary about verges and hedges, and I think it'd be fair to provide some clarity about that. Uh-huh. The services relating to the control of hedges was devolved from the department to local authorities, I think, around about 6 years ago. And I remember this clearly because I was sitting on Port Erin Commissioners at that time.
Yep.
And there was a group meeting with the other local authorities, and it was suggested, you know, well, perhaps we need to work together and, you know, purchase some roadside cleaning equipment and hedge cutting kind of services to be amalgamated. But there was a real reluctance amongst the parishes, you know, to work with the local authorities. And I think that was to their cost, because you'd have some of the local authorities where they've got miles and miles and miles of country lanes, which have turned out to be really difficult to manage and keep, you know, to a safe level where they cut the hedges back and so forth. So it's quite a challenge, say, and I'll just pluck this one out of thin air, say, for instance, Sandton Commissioners, you know, the responsibilities they've got. It's very difficult for a small part-time authority to control really what's growing in the roadside hedges.
So can I ask then, Jed, when it comes to, you mentioned there, you know, a small part-time authority, when this was devolved to local commissioners 6 years ago, was this effectively a government cut by stealth? So it was a case of, actually, we can pass this on to local commissioners, and a number of the local commissioners blatantly aren't up to the task.
Well, it was quite a significant move. And I remember the meeting because there was always a resistance from some of our adjoining local authorities to work together. Mm-hmm. And I can understand that, retaining independence and voice and what have you. But on this occasion, it really shot themselves in the foot, so to speak. But I think beyond that, it's just the way our legislation is constructed. So, for instance, you know, it's a big bugbear of mine, is the A5, which is the main road from Douglas to Ballasalla.
Yep.
There's no street lighting. And the reason why is because it's the responsibility of the local authority. And a street light is, say, 10 grand a pop to install. Mm-hmm. So there's no way that, you know, a small authority would be able to afford to do that. Now, that stretch of road has been the scene of some serious accidents, you know, pedestrian fatalities, mm-hmm. where you could argue that street lighting has been involved. But also the actual road itself, you look at the road signs, you look at Fairy Bridge, you know, the warning signs are overgrown. You look at the pavement that doesn't exist. You look at Fairy Bridge itself, which is a tourism stop where you can be hurtling around the corner and there's no speed limit and you've got someone in the middle of the road, you know, taking a photograph for the holiday snaps.
So, Jed, what can be done about this? Because listening to you here, I'm sitting here as a layman then going, crikey, we can't even trim our hedges. This is ridiculous. And you've made some bigger points there about street lighting. It's almost putting to the argument that, really, this should be central government. The local commissioners, whilst they have the best interests of their local areas at heart, the problem is that they don't have the resources to do the services which are expected and the public and the ratepayers demand. So either the rates shoot up in order to get these services done, or it should be absorbed into central government and there should be an all-island rate.
I don't see cost being prohibitive. I think this is a result of our pathetic patchwork-style governance that allows, say, on that stretch of road, you know, a bus stop to be in a hedge, allows the likes of, say, a lack of a pavement, you know, around Murray's Motorcycle Museum, which demands that, you know, because people want to get to and from that as a tourism attraction. You'll appreciate that.
Yep.
But really, there's a reluctance to get things done. And you look at, say, the state of the road markings around Blackboards or just coming into Fairy Bridge, and then you look at the amount of accidents, collisions, and, you know, serious injury events that have happened in there. And then you look at, well, who uses that road? So who drives along that road? These are key people that drive along that road. These are executives, these are police officers, these are local politicians, and they're just turning a blind eye. It's the blooming obvious thing is to join it up together and get a grip, but it's no fault of, say, particular departments and the like. It's the state of mind.
Do you think, though, I mean, do you think, Jed, that I mentioned before about the Charles Gard video, which I know ended on the sign on the side of the sea terminal that had faded so much there was nothing on it. And it was highlighted in the video, and hey presto, about a month later, there is now a new sign there. Do you think it's almost a case that we've got used to things just being mediocre? We almost become blind to the fact that this is untidy, and it takes someone to come in with an outside view and go, oh my word, this needs tarting up, this needs doing.
I think he's dealing with laziness acutely. I think that's important. But, you know, the likes of Douglas Promenade, we had, what, is it over 50 Bentley motor cars? A once-in-a-lifetime event, apparently. You know, the value of those vehicles, you know, on a financial front was millions. But this was something really special over the weekend. And they were bunged down on the prom without any publicity, without any joined up thinking about, you know, well, turn this into a great exhibition. And then alongside, you've got a wall that's knackered and, you know, looking as it does, which is, a sad indictment, really, for the city, should we call it, the city of Douglas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mentioned that before, isn't it? We're a city of Douglas. They're very excited about painting a fountain, but they can't even replace a wall and all the lampposts are snapped. And even one of the brand new lampposts still hasn't got a top on it. But let me ask you a final question, Jed, before we move on to the next caller, is that you mentioned there about the lack of promotion for this Bentley event as an example. Government used to be a department full of specialist people. So Department of Highways, Ports and Properties looked after highways, ports and properties. Department of Tourism was full of people who specialised in promoting tourism. Now it's enterprise and infrastructure, they're so vague that surely there isn't anybody who specialises in anything because they've got such wide briefs.
I think it's just a culture issue. I think it's not being awake. I think it's not being alert. It's not having the hunger. And we're paying the price. The proof's in the pudding. Just look around. Look at the state of the place and really your evidence is there. As simple as that.
OK. Thanks, Jed. Thanks for your call this afternoon. Great to speak to you.
Thank you.
Take care. I do remember an MHK once saying that for a very affluent island, we didn't look very affluent. In terms of when you arrive and look across Douglas Promenade, something to bear in mind. Right, we've got some more texts and emails coming in. It's great to hear from so many people this afternoon. Thank you very much. Let's have a look at Liz, who's been in touch, saying, do we have inspectors for hotels and cafes on the island? If so, they're not doing their job. I've just had family members staying in one of the largest hotels on the prom, and it was dreadful, unclean and shabby. I've got photographs. The island should be ashamed. Okay. First of all, I would take that up with the hotel itself, Liz. But thank you very much. Thank you very much to Mike, who's texted in saying, Alex, with regards to hedge cutting, footpaths and road maintenance, we're now paying the price for financial cutbacks for the last 10 years. So how can we expect the DOI to carry out the same level of service? It's a good point. This is an issue, isn't it, when it comes to the fact that since the 2008 VAT bombshell, we've been cutting back and cutting back and cutting back. And austerity never leads to high-quality infrastructure, does it? That's the thing. Are we beginning to look shabby? And during COVID, other places that wanted to attract tourism invested. And we didn't. And we sat and we waited for the world to wake up again. And now we're complaining that we look shabby. Maybe we didn't invest when we should have. Thank you very much Texter 762 says Jed is spot on. Thank you very much for that. And it's The Man in Line with Alex through until 1 o'clock. We've been talking about a variety of topics this afternoon. Didn't get onto the topic yet of EasyJet and the problems with reliable air services to the island, because this is something that is concerning a lot of island travellers, families and business people, because it's a big issue, you know. And if you do a quick sum, okay, so far, including the Liverpool ferry terminal, the company and the new vessel, the steam packet, it's cost about £274 million so far to buy the company, to buy a new vessel for the Liverpool ferry terminal. That's circa £274 million. Yet for some strange reason, there must be somebody in government somewhere who peddles the idea that open skies is working for us. Yet we've paid £274 million for a monopoly stable sea service. Okay? I'm not saying that's not good value for money, but the question is, why have we not even thought of getting some kind of stable air service to the island with some public finances when we spend near on £300 million for a ferry service? I'll put it out there, see what you think. Also, when we're talking about pavements on the island, did anyone notice, by the way, that it was great? If you're a biker or a scooter rider, you can park on pavements, you can park in disabled spots, you can do anything over TT. The new promenade with lovely oil leaks all over the paving. Yeah, you try that if you're a car driver. I might just go down and park my car up on the curb and Douglas Promenade and see how long it takes me to get a ticket. Because no one seemed to get tickets if you're on bikes. You notice that? Just saying. And I can't imagine that people who have to use pavements and mobility scooters disappeared during TT. Let's go back to the phone lines. And we have Dewan on line one. Hello, Dewan.
Hey, Alex. How are you today?
I'm not so bad, mate. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. And I was listening to Jed there, and Jed's quite right. And when I spoke to Al Cannon, was it 2 weeks ago, and afterwards, and he said about government being lazy. And this is the point that I was getting out there, is all of a sudden, because the proverbial has hit the fan over certain things, they decide now that the government media and the government legal team come out, and it's like, yes, well, we've been lazy, and this, that, and the other. How haven't these people who are in positions in government actually, like Jed said, walking around with their eyes closed, how haven't they picked up on this stuff and it's let go so far down? You know, the problem must start at the top. Someone must go into the office and turn around and go, hey, you know, who's in charge of this and why is it gone like that?
Do you think, because I'm also aware we're short of time, do you think there's an element of the fact that we as the public, we as the taxpayers, sit there and just put up with it?
Oh, there's so much of a silent majority. There's so, and people really need to start using their voice, because if you don't use it, you lose it. Mm-hmm. And there is, people just put up with things. I walked the other day, and I know we're short of time. I walked the other day on the route that takes you from Douglas up to the Manx Museum, the signposted route for tourists to go up the elevator through Chester Street car park and along the bridge.
Yep.
Great idea, building the bridge. But you go past a broken down fire hydrant, the door's hanging off it, and this is on the route that they're advertising. You go along the bridge, the baubles there, which are supposed to be lit up, I think, were black. They've not been cleaned for ages. And then you go to the front of the museum and you've got a rundown old telephone box, which is scabby and needs painting and needs cleaning and needs just a little bit of TLC, which obviously, as we said, has got to come from the top down.
What you seem to be describing is that the UK government are regularly accused of being in a Westminster bubble. Do you think that the government lives in a sort of Timwald bubble and then the rest of the outside world goes, actually, you spend a huge amount of time talking and looking into things. We just want things to be painted and done up and the aesthetics to be taken care of?
Absolutely. You know, the shop window, we're talking about bringing people over to the Isle of Man, getting them to relocate. The shop window is definitely a point. And it's not going to take a lot of money to do a lot of this stuff. You know, we keep giving all this money away off Ireland, like I said last week, you know, and then saying, oh, we haven't got the money to do this. We haven't got the money to cut the roads or put lamps up. Let's get our own house in order before we start giving our money away and get all these small things done. And like you said, with living in bubbles, I think that's appropriate this week with Claire Barber's statement about taking away fossil fuel boilers and stuff. No care of who's going to pay for all this, but let's just, you know, this virtual signal, let's get this done. No consideration of how much money people have got to spend on this.
Okay, lovely. Thank you, Ewan. Lovely to speak to you as always. Cheers. And I have 1 minute left, okay? And that 1 minute is going to go to David Quirk. David, you've got 1 minute. Go on.
Hi, Alex. Basically, about the scooters being over at the weekend there,
yes,
too, and it was great. I just wonder what the tourism department or government had said to encourage those scooters to come back again. I know they do it every 2 years, but we should be able to put a scooter rally on for them straight after TT or after that, and then use resources. Cycling, now Cavish is back in the frame again. Why can't we have some cycling weeks on the Isle again? And the final thing, we should be tapping into Blackpool Airport. Just let's get to the council there with their government purses round about and say, look, what can we do for you and what can I do, well, what they do for us?
Brilliant. Right? Thank you, David. We'll have you as a tourism consultant.
Bye.
Thank you very much, David Quirk there. Some valid points, yes. Blackpool Airport, one tourism hotspot to another, is what we'd like to think. Thank you very much for all your calls this afternoon. It's so nice to speak to so many voices here on The Man in Line. There were so many other topics we couldn't get to. We're talking about the island's biosphere status. How that fits in with the fly tipping I mentioned up my house, Drake, I don't know. When it comes to toilet and changing facilities, we didn't even get to that. We didn't manage to spend a penny in a whole hour. Thank you very much for your company on The Man in Line today. Andy, continue to get well. It'll be Beth sitting in this chair tomorrow. Christy's up next. I shall speak to you at 3. Ta-da.